Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. So, my topic is development of and calibration of sensors for UAS. I hope you can hear now. So this is a cooperating project. There are several scientists at our institute who are working with this, and we are also cooperating with VTT Technical Research Finland, who are mainly corresponding about sensor development, and then related to hyperspectral data processing and applications in agriculture and forestry. We have these other co-operators. So, about content, I will give some background and I will tell about what is the exact area about what I'm talking. Then I will talk about novel hyperspectral sensor technology for UAVs. I will talk about image data calibration and processing, and then I will give some example studies. So what I'm going to talk, it's something like what Josh just talked about, chain of data processing. So this is all about that. So these UAVs or UASs, they provide new dimension for remote sensing, because we can really collect data from low altitudes. We can really get information also in poor conditions, like below clouds and so on. So when we are comparing it to satellite data collection, this is a very important advantage of UAVs. In our research, we are focusing 3D technologies. This is not this 3D what Josh mentioned. This is three dimensions, X, Y, and Z. We are talking about lightweight, low-cost, close-range equipment and the applications. And available instruments for these applications, there are these traditional three-band red, green, blue sensors, and also these color infrared cameras. But recently, there are also many hyperspectral sensors coming, which are getting very lightweight and also cost-efficient, and also laser scanning and SAR, they are providing 3D data. So here is some idea about how these UAVs are then operated in precision agriculture application. So these UAVs are very part, or UAV data collection is very small part of this whole process. So we can think that are these UAVs just related to this single farmer, or is it part of a bigger picture where we are integrating this data to other information sources, like weather information? Is it related also to industry, where they are following the data quality and also making some estimates on what kind of crops are there coming in every year? And there are also many other information services and administration tasks where the data could be used. But then if we think that UAVs are typically operating with very small areas, so there should be really big standardization of the data in order to utilize this data by these all possible applications. So what we are normally considering, we can have this UAV image acquisition system, or then we can have this UAV image production system. So this acquisition system, it collects just raw images, but typically I think that the more useful concept is this image product generation system, where we are producing orthophotos and digital surface models that are then offered to users of the data. This is also similar to satellite applications, this image product generation system, where there are really defined some end products like level 2 satellite data products. And my presentation is now more involved with this image product generation system outputs. So about this, a few words more about this hyperspectral UAV-based precision agriculture. So as we understand this, hyperspectral measurements are highly relevant for precision agriculture because there we need a lot of information about the crops. So, and also there can be some diseases and so on where these hyperspectral measurements are very advantageous. And there are many different approaches available for hyperspectral sensors. These conventional systems, they are these push-boom scanning systems. And now there is this new technology which enables area format imaging, hyperspectral imaging. And in my presentation, I'm talking more about these area format sensors and focusing visible and near-infrared spectral ranges. And really this data processing aspect is the focus. So with this kind of systems, the key requirements are that first of all, in typical UAV campaigns, we wouldn't like to have any ground control. So autonomous systems without need for ground control, they are really desirable. And also quantitative information in varying illumination conditions. We need that because this is one of the key aspects of UAVs that we can work below clouds. So this has to be taken into account. And also we need to integrate this data to other environmental data. So here are some examples about the conditions where we have collected UAV images. So this is where we are developing then these data processing approaches. So in some cases we also have nice weather without any clouds, but normally not. So now I'm talking about this new hyperspectral camera technology. It is based on feature actuated Fabry-Perot interferometer, and this is invention of VTT Technical Research Center of Finland. So here comes some technical details about this technology. So the first aspect is that there is this Fabry-Perot interferometer, and this interferometer, it has an air gap inside there. I'm sorry, this doesn't work very well. And by changing width of this air gap, it then provides a certain wavelengths of light can then go through the interferometer. And here in the upper picture you can see three different air gaps, and the transmission is showed with respect to wavelength. They are this red, green and blue, so there are three frequencies of light that can be passed through the filter. And then in our case this Fabry-Perot interferometer is integrated with this normal Bayer matrix CMOS sensor, and the quantum efficiency of this CMOS sensor is here. And then when we put the light through this Bayer matrix, then finally the final pixel quantum efficiency is like this. So with this setup we can get 1 to 3 different quantum efficiencies with a single air gap. Here is the picture, more detailed picture about the optical path in one of the prototypes of this camera. So the Fabry-Perot is located here, and then there are these two different lens couplets, and then you can use some additional filters to tune the performance, and finally we have this CCD detector here. And here you can see a picture about the camera what we are using. So this system is weighing 700 grams, and it has about 10 millimeter focal length. The image size of this system is 1,000 by 648 pixels, and pixel size is 11 micrometers. And there can be several different setups with this system. There are also available shortwave infrared system, and we have some prototypes here, but this is also commercially available nowadays by Finnish company. And the components, we have the memory card, then there are irradiance sensors measuring incoming irradiance, and GPS receiver, and then lithium polymer battery. So this is very compact and lightweight system. And then a few words about how this is then used in practice. So before the flight, you define sequence of air gaps. So you can, for instance, concentrate the red edge region, or how you want to do it. Typically, you give 24 different air gaps values. Then you define exposure time in order to get good image quality. And then you define image interval, so you can collect block images and get overlapping images. And then when the camera is operated, the air gap is given for each of the images that are taken. And during each air gap, we get 1 to 3 individual bands. And then finally, there are 30 to 40 bands in total. And here you can see 3 bands with different air gap values. So this is actually one image. This is the starting gap, starting layer, and this is ending layer, and then there are something like 30 to 40 layers between this one sequence. So, and collecting one data qubit takes something like 1.8 seconds. It depends a little bit on the sensor. And in mobile data collection, like with UAVs, we typically do not stop, but we are flying all the time. So then there will be mismatch between overlapping spectral bands. So this is one issue that has to be corrected in the post-processing. But here you can see examples about images. So this is from forest. So we can see that there is this mismatch between bands, but this can be corrected. And here is also for agricultural application. Next topic was image data processing. So first of all, I think it's quite standard practice that we are collecting this kind of image blocks with overlapping images. So typically we are having 80 or 60% overlaps between the images. And by this way, we can get maybe 10 views to each object point. And we can also collect with our systems vertical and oblique images. And then we can get the 3D coordinates of points. Oh, this has changed. Should fit this ray. This is the imaging ray, and it should go from the perspective center, but for some reason it has been stiff. So, but the idea is that we have observe the same point from two overlapping images, and we can calculate the XYZ coordinates of the point. And then nowadays, there are very efficient routines that can really provide us 3D data. Oops. And then also, this image overlaps, they are very advantageous when we are concerning the radiometric processing. And here you can see some examples about radiometric challenges. So when we are collecting data in variable cloud cover, we can have this kind of effect that part of the block is collected in shadow and part in sunlight, so there are big radiometric differences between the images. Also, when we are collecting data at bright sunlight, there can be big differences, and this is what we have to solve in our data processing. So here is the basic processing line for UAV image data processing. So after the data collection, we are processing the raw data. With all sensors, we have to apply some laboratory calibration data. With our FBI camera, we also have some additional steps like spectral correction. Then we need to determine orientations of the images. We calculate digital surface models. We calculate radiometric models. And finally, for instance, these orthophotos as the output product that are then used by the applications. So the geometric processing and all the other processing steps are, I think they are quite well defined already. but the radial method model calculation is one of the biggest challenges. So here you can see in passive imaging which are the major problems with radial method processing. First of all, there is this view illumination related problem, so that depending on where the sunlight comes and where the observation is, we get different reflectance value. It is also called bidirectional reflectance distribution function, this function that models this phenomenon. And here you can see one example about this effect or phenomenon. So here in the center of this PRDF cake, we can see what is the result when we look the object from top. And when we go to different directions in the image, we get different values. So this has to be corrected in post-processing of the data, or at least taken into account. And another topic is these different illumination conditions. And we have developed approach for this. We are calling it radiometric block adjustment. So the input for this system is overlapping spectral rectangle format data cubes, and we can also have some other data. Task is to eliminate all the radiometric disturbances caused by illumination and atmosphere, and also sensor instability if there is something like this. And we also change to the digital numbers to reflectance. And our approach is that we model the emitting event with all relevant parameters. So there are atmospheric parameters and PRDF. We make observation equations, and then we solve all the parameters that impact our observations. And the major observation group is radiometric tie points, so they are digital numbers in the images. But we can also have some irradiance measurements and reflectance targets. And the output is radiometric model that corrects all the this phenomenon. One interesting method also for radiometric correction is to use some in situ irradiance measurements. So we have used irradiance sensors on ground, or also in UAV we have implemented spectral measurement and also broadband spectral measurement in UAV. And then one approach what we don't want to use is to have reflectance reference targets. So if we don't have stable data, then we might need to put several of these spectral reference targets in the target area. But by using these in-flight observations and this radiometric block adjustment approach, we try to get rid of this kind of need. And final output of this all processing is here. So first of all, we have these point clouds, and for every point in this point cloud, we have this spectral data, and we can also have those PRDF cakes, even for every point if we have collected suitable data for that. And then on top you can see orthophoto mosaic, spectral orthophoto mosaic, and the DSM. So these are the outputs. Here are some examples about the data applications where we have used this approach. So we have forests with low and high altitudes, 100 meters and 400 meters, fields, and also water quality. So then a few words about sensor radiometric calibration. So here you can see the whole data processing chain within camera. But what we want to solve during the calibration is so that we can relate the digital numbers that are collected to a sensor radiance that is entering to the sensor. So when we know the sensor radiance, then we can solve all the phenomena that influence the emitting. So in the important parameters in this, first of all, we have this absolute calibration factor, which is the relationship between the digital number and the incoming radiance, and it is for every band, it's wavelength dependent. Then there are many errors or inaccuracies in the image here you can see the lens wall phenomenon, which is caused by the fact that there are less light in the borders of the images. There are also some non-uniformities in the CCD or CMOS elements, and then also these dark signal-related effects which have to be corrected. Then we also need to know the spectral response, the central wavelength, and also bandwidth. And then there might be some other sensor-dependent parameters like spectral smile and thermal stability and aspects like this. Here is one example about the setup of this spectral camera calibration. So central equipment in laboratory calibration of cameras is we need a lamp giving good light, and then we need integrating sphere, which gives in its output aperture, it gives very uniform light. Then we need a monochromator for spectral calibration, and then all these measurements have to be related somehow to absolute radiometric quantities, and preferably they are traceable to national meteorology quantities or this SE quantities. And in our FDI camera, we solve absolute and relative radiometric calibration, spectral sensitivity, and smile in the laboratory calibration process. So then we are also often talking about vicarious radiometric calibration. So it's something else than laboratory calibration. We are making it in flight conditions. And in many cases, this is very interesting to check if the sensor calibration is valid also in flight conditions, also quality of output products, and also system calibration if there are some changes or updates, and just system check. So here you can see the principle is similar what we are using in laboratory, so we need to have some reflectance targets whose reflectance we know very accurately, both the spectral reflectance and this PRDF reflectance. Then we need some in situ irradiance measurements. So we have irradiance sensors and some photo this sun photometer. And then we will use some radiative transfer code to calculate the reflectance of the target to the images, and then we will get the response of the target in image, and we can calculate all the parameters and check. In Finland, for instance, we have this kind of permanent test site. It has been already 20 years existing, and it's regularly used for calibration of photogrammetric cameras, and also some hyperspectral instruments are calibrated there. Also for satellite sensors, there is a worldwide calibration test site network. Then one question is that what kind of calibration test sites do we need for UAVs? I already heard that you have in US you have some test sites, and that's good. And here you can see our test site. So for UAVs we are using this kind of transportable test site system. So here are our targets. So typically in our campaigns we want to check that quality of the data is good, so we have this. So a few campaigns. First of all, our UAV measurement systems, we are mostly using this kind of octocopters or hexacopters. They are, for research purposes at least, they are very good. So we have the UAV payload. Typically we are using this spectral imager. We have also often RGB camera, and then we have this GPS and receivers and irradiance sensors. And on ground control, we have of course this mission design and control, and typically we want to use also this in situ reference measurements in order to for data quality purposes. So I have some campaign examples. First of all, we have this nitrogen fertilization campaign in 2012, and I think I'm running out of time, so I will talk very few details about here. So we were flying at 140 meters, ground sample distance for hyperspectral data was 14 centimeters, and we had 5 image strips and 80 images, and the imaging conditions were really bad. So So if we didn't do any radiometric processing, our spectrums were bad with image-based this radiometric block adjustment. We got quite feasible spectrums. And then in this case, we had good reference measurements because there were this fertilization and seeding plants, so that there was less variability in biomass and nitrogen. So there were these reference samples where these were measured, dry mass, moisture, and nitrogen content. And then we were using some hydrospectral nonlinear unmixing to select the feasible plants or make the feature extraction in hydrospectral data. And then we used some KNN-based estimator to estimate. So in this case, the RMSE of biomass estimation and nitrogen estimation was also less than 20%. So you can see the estimated and measured values in these slides. And the R squared was 0.75 for biomass estimation and 0.66 for nitrogen estimation. And then we were using this kind of formula based on biomass and nitrogen estimate made in order to calculate the nitrogen shortage. So this was one of our campaigns. Then this year we had this window wheat campaign. So again, this nitrogen fertilization optimization was the objective. This was a larger area, about 25 hectares. There were very good weather, and you can see here some pictures about the campaign. So this was when we had good weather, there were these view illumination related effects which make the data very, very variable, but then we used our radiometric block adjustment and got uniform data. Here are some spectrums, because it was only 10 centimeters, the crops, there were also, the background was influencing these spectrums. But anyway, it was easy to detect from spectrums that where we had the good areas and where we had the poor areas, and then we can also find in the final, there is this information about measured yield, that these are also these good and bad spectrums. They were also relevant for this output data. Then I had a final example, but now I think I have to stop and go to the conclusions. So we have also used this with manned aircraft from higher altitudes for detecting this insects. But about the conclusions, so in order to provide reliable remote sensing data, we need accurate data processing. So we need accurate geometric and radiometric calibration of sensors. We need sensor integration. Typically, it's good to have cameras and irradiance sensors, at least in UAV. We need georeferencing and 3D object reconstruction, atmospheric correction, PRDF effect compensation, and then also this model-based object interpretation and integration of various observational data is very advantageous. And trade-offs of sensor calibration is that if we have accurately calibrated accurate sensors, then we can make this kind of direct reliable measurements. But then if the sensors are not accurate and reliable, then we need a lot of ground control and it's more difficult. And about the sensor, what we have been using here, so this novel FBI hyperspectral camera, it is very promising approach for lightweight UAV applications, and I think that push-broom UAV sensors are also promising, especially if they are integrated with some RGB stereoscopic data, so it makes it more reliable. And in our institute, we have really a lot of different applications where we are using and developing these techniques, agriculture, forestry, water quality, and environmental impact, and also virtual reality models and also meteorological aspects and climate variables are included. So we are working in difficult imaging conditions. We have this continental humid climate zone, so this is what is relevant in our area. So thank you for the attention. If there are any questions or time for questions, I will be happy to answer.